Julie Mayer is here with another Cat's Whiskers Spring Special.
Yes, Julie Mayer here, and while the cat's away, we've got more fun for you. We'll be giving out the results of last week's competition, reading out your birthday greetings, and telling you some more stories with music. But first, have you ever thought about how important music is and how it affects our lives? Christine Lees has joined me in the studio. Christine, now you're a violinist. Perhaps you can tell us a little about music.
Well, you know, music, whenever it was composed, it tells a story in sound. In very early times, it was mainly performed in the church to help the congregation to pray and to believe. Italy, with its monasteries, is perhaps the home of church music. High in the hills near Rome is a monastery where this music was written.
That's lovely. So who composed that music?
Well, it was written by one of the monks who lived in the monastery. His name was Father Domenico Maria Stella, and he wrote it many years ago.
So what was the next stage in the development of music?
Gradually, small groups began to play music together, and these groups became part of the way of life of ordinary people. And that's still true today, of course. One of the most famous composers of string quartets was Haydn. He wrote over 100 of them. He's really known as the father of the string quartet, and he lived in the 18th century. A string quartet consists of two violins, a viola, and the big fellow, the cello. That was the last movement of Haydn's string quartet, Opus 74, number 2.
And a lot of composers wrote music just for one instrument, didn't they?
Yes, Chopin composed music for one instrument, mostly the piano.
I can remember trying to play pieces by Chopin on our piano at home.
They're very popular. Chopin was born in Poland in 1810, but spent most of his life in France, where he composed a lot of his music. Part of the opening of Chopin's Berceuse, Opus 57.
Now, what about operas? They're like plays, aren't they? But the actor sings a part.
Yes, and they act as well. Now, operas have been enjoyed from medieval times to the present day, and they usually have a fascinating story with a very complicated plot. For instance, Mozart's Magic Flute, Verdi's Otello, and Sir Benjamin Britten's popular opera Peter Grimes.
And what about symphonies? When were they first written?
Well, we're back to Haydn again. From his time in the 18th century, composers have been writing symphonies, which are compositions for the orchestra. Beethoven's one of the best-known writers of symphonies, but then there are many others, like Brahms, Mendelssohn, who loved to write music about fairies.
And there were many more, weren't there?
Yes, Dvorak and his New World Symphony, and bringing us into this century, Sibelius, who loved to write about the vast snowfields of his native country, Finland.
Well, let's listen to a piece of his music. Thank you, Christine. And that was the end of the first movement of Sibelius's Second Symphony. And now for this week's competition. We'd like you to write down on a postcard how music affects you and why you like listening to it. There'll be copies of an eyewitness guide to music for the three best entries, and we'll be giving the results of last week's competition later in the programme. Meanwhile, it's time to join Willie Rushton, Derek Griffiths, Susan Sheridan and the BBC Concert Orchestra for three more of Aesop's fables.
From far she came, the crane, flying through the wind and rain, to a land of snow so white, there softly to alight.
To a land of snow so white, there softly to alight.
There, above the river's sound, she heard rising from the ground, above the hooting of the owl, the wolf's long, hungry howl.
The wolf's long, hungry howl.
Loud and long he sang his tune to the pale and distant moon, sailing through wisps of cloud. He howled both long and loud. Having sung the night away, hungry woke the wolf next day.
Singing for my supper won't pay. Time I went to hunt for prey.
Off to hunt he loped, and as he loped, he hoped to find some beast to eat and fill his mouth with meat.
Loped and hoped and loped and hoped to fill his mouth with meat.
With a swift and cruel leap, he brought down a weak old sheep. And now he had more meat than he could eat. Gobbling greedily at great speed, gobbling speedily with great greed. Was it fate or just bad luck? In his throat a bone got stuck. Now when he tried to sing, he discovered terrible thing. He couldn't get one right note out of his tight and bone-stuck throat. Then, in his rage and pain, he suddenly spotted the long-legged crane.
So glad to meet you. Don't be afraid, I won't eat you. I have a bone stuck in my throat. Can't sing a single note. Could you reach it with your beak and help me sing again and speak? Of course, I'll make it worth your while.
He added with a smile.
Step this way, do I pray. I pray you, Crane, do step this way. This way.
And Crane didn't know what to do. Could she trust Wolf? Well, would you? She took one step forward. Then two. Then three steps back. And forward two.
one step, two step, three and four, five, and yes, just one more. Pause to inspect the view, then another one or two. Shall I go on?
Yes, do.
Would you? She stepped and stopped and stepped again. Then at last Crane did decide and said to Wolf,
"Now open wide."
Wide Wolf opened up his jaw and said,
"Oh, my throat is sore."
"Say ah,"
said Crane.
"Ah,"
said Wolf. And,
"Oh, the pain."
And,
"Ow."
How Wolf did groan.
"Now,"
said Crane,
"I see it. But if I remove the bone, what is my reward, my gain?"
"Reward,"
said Wolf in a voice quite gruff,
"getting back your head is reward enough. And I promise you, you will,"
said Wolf,
"sincerely."
But in his heart, he lied. He quite intended really to keep Crane's head inside. But clever Crane got a long thick twig and stuck it between those teeth so big, now they couldn't shut down tight and give her neck a nasty bite. In went the beak, out came the bone. Out came the twig, knocked with a stone. And Wolf could sing his song again, thanks to clever Crane.
"Your reward,"
said Wolf,
"is a chance to dance. I'll sing while you prance."
And he sang his song by the light of the moon, while Crane pranced and danced to his tune.
"Dance, dance, dance to my tune, while I sing in the moonlight. Dance, dance, dance to my tune. Dance the night away. Tap, 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 tabity. Tap, tap your toes. Anything goes when you're dancing. Dance, dance, dance to my tune. Till the sun brings the day. Tap, 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 tabity. Tap, tap your toes. Come on, anything goes when you're dancing. Come on, Crane, lift up your feet. Gird up your feathers, dear. Dance to my tune while I sing in the moonlight. Dance, dance, dance to my tune.
Goodbye, Crane. Come back soon.
And to another land away Crane flew. But did she come back? Well, would you? Winter gave way to spring and summer's heat. But by thirst, an old crow would not be beat. The recent summers that Crow could remember had been really wet, too much rain and not enough sun. But this summer was different. Too much sun and too little rain. The dry heat made Crow so thirsty.
"Water! Water! Ooh. What would I give for water?"
Then one day he saw some. But It was in a jar, at the bottom of the jar. He couldn't reach it however hard he tried. And then he thought,
if I can't get to the water, I must get the water to me.
And he tried to pull the jar over so that the water would spill out. And then he heard a voice.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
It was his friend, the woodpecker.
The water will drain away into the ground. And then where will you be?
Dry,
replied Crow.
Dry as a stone.
And that gave him a brilliant idea.
Stones? Of course. If I fill the jug with stones, the water will rise to the top. Caw! Then I'll be able to reach it.
So he set about collecting stones, with Woodpecker's help. Carefully, they dropped the stones into the jug, one by one.
One by one, by one, by one, by one, by one, by one. One by one, by one, by one, by one.
That's the way to get things done. Stone by stone, by stone, by stone. Each one on its own.
One by one, by one.
Don't stop.
By one.
Rising up towards the top.
By one.
To where you'll sip a drop. One by one, by one.
One by one, by one, by one, by one.
Don't hurry, slow the pace. Slow and steady wins the race. That's the way to get things done.
And water, Crow, is what you've won.
Meanwhile, some fields away, there was a race to be run. Whatever the pace, it was a race to be won. Hare had always laughed at Tortoise's slow, plodding pace.
You're slow, old boy, and you've got a funny face.
I know I'm slow, but you know...
What do I know?
Slow and steady wins the race.
Prove it, then.
All right. I'm fed up with your boastful ways. To the end of the field, let us race.
When they heard there was going to be a race, all the animals came to watch. Toad was there to take their bets.
I'll give you 10 pennies if Tortoise wins.
10 to 1 on the Tortoise.
But only 2 if Hare does.
2 to 1 on the Hare.
Soon, they were off.
They're running a race, they're running a race.
There goes the Hare.
He's setting the pace, he's setting the pace, he's setting the pace. The Hare and the Tortoise are running a race.
There goes the Hare.
Wow!
There!
Where?
There!
Wow!
There goes the Hare.
Along the straight and narrow, swifter than an arrow, everybody knows who's gonna win.
Up and over,
through the clover, through the field of daisies.
There he goes.
Everyone knows the Hare is gonna win.
10 to 1 on the Tortoise.
2 to 1 on the Hare.
I'll bet my bottom dollar.
Hare will be first.
There goes the Hare.
Within seconds, Hare was miles ahead. It looked hopeless for Tortoise, but Tortoise didn't think so.
Look at the Hare, nose in the air. Thinks he's the bee's knees, it's not fair. I'll be first, past the winning post, 'cause all he does is boast. He doesn't have the ghost of a chance, and I'll lead him such a dance. Take heed. Look at the hare. Well, I don't care if it takes me a week or a month or a year. September, October, November, December, I'll be asleep again by then. Mark my words, I'll be first past the winning post, 'cause all he does is boast, and he doesn't have the ghost of a chance, and I'll lead him such a dance.
They're running a race, they're running a race. There goes the air. He's setting the pace, he's setting the pace, he's setting the pace. The hare and the tortoise are running a race.
Surely there was no way tortoise could catch up with hare. However,
slow and steady wins the race. Pace by pace by pace. Hare might have the longer legs, but watch me win the race.
Meanwhile,
there goes the hare.
Where?
Of steam.
Phew! I'm out of puff. I've had enough. For a minute or two, methinks, I'll not lose if I stop for a snooze. It just takes 40 weeks.
And did Tortoise go any faster? No, he just kept plodding along.
Plod, plod. Plod along, I'll get there in the end. I can't see the hare ahead. He must be round the bend. Oh dear. Plod, plod, plod along. Inch by inch by inch, step by step, pace by pace, slow and steady wins the race.
And inch by inch, plod by plod, Tortoise passed hare. The other animals tried to wake her. If she lost, they'd lose their money.
Wake up!
Oh, alas, too late. To lose his poor hare's fate.
And lost indeed she had. So those who thought hare was going to win didn't get their 2 pence from Toad. But those who bet on Tortoise made 10 pence each.
10 to 1 on the tortoise, 2 to 1 on the hare.
I bet my bottom dollar
Tortoise wouldn't be first there.
I've lost all my money.
Sorry to have proved you wrong, but the lesson of my little song, a fact you've got to face, is slow and steady wins the race. Slow and steady wins the race.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Hare set a fast and furious pace, but Tortoise, slow and steady, won the race.
Aesop's Fables were told by Willie Rushton, Derek Griffiths and Susan Sheridan with the BBC Concert Orchestra. Now for the winners of last week's competition. Well, we've had so many beautiful pictures, it's been very difficult choosing the best four. But we have managed to, and the three lucky winners of the Eyewitness Guide to Music are Cleo Fleming from Bath, Dominic Lawson of Nottingham, and Joseph Savage from Surrey. And the winner of John Jensen's original illustration about our programme that was in last week's Sunday Correspondent goes to Maria Raffaelli from Aberdeenshire. Well done, and your prizes will be on their way to you very soon. Next Wednesday, the finals of a very important competition are being held in Cardiff. Young musicians from around Britain will be competing for the title of the Young Musician of the Year. More than 500 entries were received, and over the last few months, judging has been going on until now, when there are just four finalists of the piano, wind, brass and string classes. As you can imagine, it must be a nerve-wracking time. David Pyatt was the last winner of the competition. David, how did you feel just before the final?
Very nervous before I was going to go on. Yeah, I sat through the entire first half of the concert getting more and more nervous.
So what did you do to overcome your nerves?
There's absolutely nothing you can do. Bit of a pity, really.
Now, you're very much involved with this year's competition, aren't you?
That's right. The National Youth Orchestra, of whom I'm a member, is actually going to be doing the orchestral accompaniment to the Young Musician of the Year, so we're going to be playing the concertos.
Well, let's hope the competition goes really well. Thank you, David. And please stay and help me read out this week's birthday greetings. Happy birthday to Helen Pilch, Tristan Worcester, Jane Higginbottom and Bethany Barnett.
Robert Cockerill, Lucy Coggle, Catherine Hamley and Ben Buckland.
And best wishes to Daniel Rawson, Emma Cushley, Alistair Henderson and John Outram.
To Edward Stewart, Ian Pattinson, Josie Mayer and Laura Gould.
Emma Norris, Bryony Morgan, Alexander Martin and Sarah Campbell.
Charlotte Green, Andy Stevens, Robin Vinter and Jesse Binns.
Best wishes to Dominic Summers, Neil and Andrew Hall, James Clark and Heather Graham.
Sarah Godfrey, Siobhan Boyle, Michael Carly Smith and Katie Bishop.
Archie Campbell, Andrew Bryant, Laura Fife and Jessica McLeod.
Alexander Barrett, Michael Van Royen, Simeon Ewing and Gemma Hill.
Best wishes to Stephen Dick, Piers Chipperfield, Duncan and William Tarran and Richard Attu.
To Julia Shute, Alison Mayers, Ruth Myhill and Naomi Bush.
Happy birthday to Ross Myhill, Henry Willits, Emily Birch and Thomas Barker.
To Philip Dragano, Benjamin Poxon and Timothy Giles.
And finally, April Martle and Narina McAllister. Thank you, David. I'm afraid that brings us to the end of this week's programme. Please remember, you must send postcards only for the competition. The address is Cat's Whiskers Spring Special, BBC PO Box 40, Manchester M601FR. Next week, Judy Dench will join the BBC Concert Orchestra to tell us the story of Peter and the Wolf. We'll have the results of this week's competition and your birthday greetings. Until then, bye-bye.
And while the cat's away, the presenter is Julie Mayer. The storytellers in this week's Aesop's Fables were Willie Rushton, Derek Griffiths and Susan Sheridan, and they were accompanied by the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Barry Wordsworth and led by Cynthia Fleming. The producer of Aesop's Fables was Brian Scott Hughes. The series producer is Julia Brooke. And that address to write to again, here it is. It's Cat's Whiskers Spring Special, BBC PO Box 40, Manchester M60, that's M601FR. And now it's time for this week's edition of Bookshelf.